Scott Parkinson is one of my favorite Shakespeare actors, one of the finest Shakespeare actors in the country.
Starting off well.
A million years ago, he played Caliban in a production of The Tempest for me. Gosh, was it 4 or so years ago? He was an amazing Hamlet here in the suburbs of Chicago, Illinois. Now he is playing Cassius in a production of Julius Caesar, and I had never even occurred to me how perfect you would be for Cassius. But you do have that lean and hungry look.
Yes, indeed, I do.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or tablet or phone. I'm Austin Titchener, one third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, number 514, Streamlining Julius Caesar. The Writers' Theater here in the Chicago suburb of Glencoe has opened its first full season in its new award-winning performance space with a glorious and incredibly timely production of William Shakespeare's Julius Caesar. Scott Parkinson plays Cassius and also adapted and streamlined the text to focus the story in the second half, particularly on the dual protagonists of Brutus and Cassius. Scott's an old friend from Dee's and My Days at American Stage Festival in New Hampshire and was gracious enough to sit down and explain his audacity at improving William Shakespeare, and how he also ended up co-directing the play with Writers' Theatre Artistic Director Michael Halberstam. I asked Scott whether this was the first time he'd ever played Cassius.
It is not. I've done it, this would be the fourth production. I did it first down at the Pier at Chicago Shakes in like 2002, and then in 2008 I did it at the Shakespeare Theatre in D.C., actually in repertory with Antony and Cleopatra.
All right.
And then Shakespeare Theater does remounts every once in a while. So it's been two productions in which I've played Cassius, one of which was a remount for a third production, but there was enough time in between the original and the remount that I do feel like I've done it three times before this.
Well, and in this production at the Writers' Theater, you are not only playing Cassius, but you have co-directed it and sort of adapted the script. How did that all happen?
That happened... I think around, it must have been when I first came out here to do Arcadia, which was around February. Michael Halberstam, the artistic director of Writers, and I were out for dinner one night, and we were talking about this and that. And he, at the time, he was considering doing a totally different show for the first show of the season. But everything that was going on with the election and everything in the country and around the world, this, he's wanted to do Julius Caesar for a very long time and has been waiting until he had a facility and a new theater space where he felt like he could really do it with the scale that he wanted to do it. So he was starting to think about Julius Caesar, but he knew he wanted it. Well, the only thing he said to me is, I want to do a 90-minute adaptation of Julius Caesar. Would you be interested in helping me do that and play Cassius? And at first I really wasn't sure. Cassius is not a role I was ever dying to play again. I think it's a fiendishly difficult part and not.
Wow, that's funny to hear you say that, because you make it look so easy, but well, go on.
And not, just not always a terribly rewarding role in some ways. I've probably enjoyed it the most this time as I ever have, so I'm glad ultimately that I said yes to doing it again.
Right.
But my first instinct was, God, no! I do not want to play Cassius again. And doing an adaptation intrigued me more. I was interested in that. So I went and I looked at the script and started to, you know, just sort of looked at what was essential about the story and what could go, and just tried to pare it down to that, and with the conversations that Michael and I had had in mind about the play. We had talked a lot about the play and about how we thought the play worked and how we wanted to see that it sort of move from the first part of the play to the second part of the play where it goes to war, and how we envisioned all of that. And so with all of that in mind, I kind of went away and looked at the script and looked at Shakespeare's play and started to just kind of, you know,
trim away. Yeah.
And we had originally thought to cut a lot of the stuff about the omens and the portents and all the supernatural in the play, because we knew we wanted to do a very sort of up to the minute production, quote unquote. And we felt, Michael felt, that that stuff wouldn't necessarily speak to a modern audience. And I was struck by how much language in the play is actually about these omens and these portents, and from so many different mouths of people throughout the course of the play, even at the, you know, before they go to war, which in our adaptation is now during the war. Brutus and Cassius have a scene where they're talking about where Cassius brings up this, these portents, these signs that have happened before the war, the fact that it's his birthday, the fact that these eagles that were there with them, traveling with them, suddenly disappeared. And so all of this language just seemed really important to me all of a sudden. It seemed like there was something in the play about, look out, bad stuff is coming, and you need to do something about it, which just felt very, suddenly felt very up to the minute.
Well,
and so we just kind of decided to focus in some ways the adaptation on
And there's something about, I mean, even in our current election, which you guys reflect on in the production, there's, you know, there is a sense from Secretary Clinton that it is her destiny. It is her time.
Yes.
And her rival, you know, Mr. Trump, is on a Shakespearean level of villainy,
yes.
You know, I guess for some people, not me particularly, I'm far too neutral in it. But I mean, that does seem to speak to the moment for sure.
I heard today that she said something in the New York Times about she's the only thing standing between us and Armageddon or something,
wow.
Or between
the apocalypse,
yes.
The apocalypse,
which I think is not hyperbole. I think she's quite right.
She might be right
I'm
on.
I'm less neutral than you are, clearly. But obviously Trump was a huge figure in our conversations about Julius Caesar, this person who is, I mean, again, speaking not neutrally, Julius Caesar is a far more accomplished figure than Donald Trump is.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a man who conquered the known world and had certainly a lot to be arrogant about.
Yeah, yes.
But he did have an arrogance that was ultimately his downfall, his inability to see that this godhead he has sort of set himself up at. And I mean, he always refers to himself in the third person in the play, Caesar this, Caesar that. You know, he has this unbelievable sense of his own immortality and invulnerability and which is ultimately kind of his downfall, which has wonderful parallels with Trump. So
right.
We don't even have to put, you know, hammer them on the head in any way. They just sort of...
Well, and it's funny, Dee and I saw it, and we both realized, God, we really don't know this play. It was not a play I ever had to read in high school, although many did have. And it feels like... I don't know what you've done to the first half of the play, but it feels like the second half of the play has been much streamlined and focused on the sort of dual protagonists of Cassius and Brutus. Is that fair to say?
Yes, absolutely. And also on the other side of the war, focusing on Antony and Octavius. Because Octavius in Caesar, the play, Shakespeare's play, is a very minor presence. So we tried to give... In the streamlining, we actually added a little bit to the character of Octavius, just to kind of, we brought in some language from Antony and Cleopatra to up the kind of conflict between Antony and Octavius that exists from the get-go in Shakespeare's play, but is much more developed in Antony and Cleopatra.
Right. Did that make the character? Did that make playing Cassius more interesting to you? Did by focusing
to streamline it?
Yeah.
I think to some extent it did. I mean, it being in it as many times as I've been in it and seen it as many times as I've seen it, the hard part for me structurally is always the fourth and the fifth act once they go to war, because suddenly there are all these new characters that get introduced and they have all these names that you're trying to follow, and there's this guy Titinius who's Cassius's best friend, and you're like, what? He describes him as his best friend, and you're like, I thought Brutus was your best friend. I mean, there's suddenly so many, and the war in the play just goes on and on and on, and then there's one battle and Cassius mistakes and thinks Brutus has lost the battle, but he didn't actually, and so Cassius kills himself on a mistake, and then Brutus goes and fights again and they lose, and so Brutus tries to get somebody to help him run on his sword and nobody will do it, and it just goes on and on and on and on. And I think the story that you start with, which to me is the story of Brutus and Cassius,
right,
gets a little diffused and gets a little lost. So having been in that story and watching it, the ending I've always wanted it to have is that Cassius and Brutus sort of end their story together, and so the challenge I sort of set for myself on adapting it was, is there a way to do that? Is there a way to write a kind of double suicide scene for the two of them using language that's all in the play, which it all is, and see if that's the experiment was to see if that might be a more satisfying ending for a modern audience. And certainly with a streamlined version where you were trying to get it down to a certain amount of time anyway, it made more sense to wrap the war up more quickly in that way anyway. So I think that was where the sort of impetus came from that. And I asked Michael, I said, this is the way I've always wanted to end. What do you think? And he said, well, write it and see. And I did. And he liked what I did. And so we ended up keeping it. And I think it is in a way, it's more satisfying for me to play it that way, because I've always been confused, having played it in the past, what happens to Sir Cassius after the assassination of Caesar. I don't know how entirely clear it is in the play, his journey from there on. It gets very, and his journey with Brutus. There's, of course, the famous tent scene, which mm-hmm. is between the two of them, which is, you know, a well-known scene. And then something weird happens to them by the end of that scene. And I'm not always sure on what footing they are together through the rest of the play, Shakespeare's play. And this way, the way we did it felt like it was maybe a cleaner, clearer trajectory somehow for a play that's already incredibly confusing at times.
I wonder if he had commercial or ensemble imperatives that he had to deal with. Shakespeare, you know, oh, I've got to do 5 acts. All right. Oh, I've got all these actors I've got to write for. So
yeah.
I know, you know, the extra textual issues he had to deal with.
I think that's a great point. And I think he was probably also dealing with an audience that was educated differently than we are and just knew more about who these people were.
Right.
They knew who Titinius and Messala were in the war, and so there wasn't the question in their minds of who is this new character? Why do I have to?
Right.
I wonder if that's the case. So that sometimes those characters that seem so sketched in and seem so almost, you know, not to have been given much of his attention was because he just assumed that people knew who they were.
It's like the Buckinghams, Gloucesters, and Exeters in all the history plays. And a modern audience goes, well, who, what?
Ooh, right, yeah. And of course Shakespeare's audience would know who all those people were.
Yeah, exactly.
They would have been taught in school.
Hi, this is Cynthia Ryder, Executive Director of the Oregon Shakespeare Festival, and this is the podcast for the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
Where can you RSC the RSE? Our fall of 2016 tour of the special election edition of The Complete History of America Abridged continues across 17 states this week, including performances in New Jersey, Ohio, Virginia, South Carolina, Vermont, New Hampshire, and Florida. We'll also be touring The Ultimate Christmas Show Abridged in the U.S. between Thanksgiving and Christmas, with performances in Ohio, North Carolina, Massachusetts, Colorado, and Maryland. And in November and December, we'll be touring The Complete Works of William Shakespeare Abridged Revised in China for 3 weeks, and in February 2017, we'll begin a 4-month UK tour of William Shakespeare's long-lost first play, Abridged. We'll have more information about all of our overseas tours later this fall. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for the Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. Go to ReducedShakespeare.com and click on the link to subscribe, and check out our touring page for specific box office, venue, and ticket information. And now back to my conversation with actor, and now adapter and director, Scott Parkinson.
Had you ever directed before, or was this a new thing?
I have always wanted to direct. I had some directing experience in college, way, way back in college, and I directed a Theater for Young Audiences production at Theater at the Center in Indiana back in 1999, I want to say. I directed a Theater for Young Audiences production of the Scottish play. I guess I can say it out here in your yard, Macbeth. It's all right. Nothing's going to happen. The tree's not going to fall on us.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Little
Kitty,
thunder.
Kitty's unhappy. But that was it. And then other than that, I've always wanted to, but of course it's just trying to find your next acting job always takes up so much time that to sort of shift focus. I've never been a very good multitasker, so.
Right.
So fortunately, the opportunity arose here. You know, Michael, of course, Michael and I have been friends for a very long time, and he's known that I've always been interested in directing. And so when I started to work on the adaptation and I approached him and said, you know, I'd actually kind of like to have more than just an adapter's voice in this. Could I assistant direct? And he said, well, I've already got an assistant director, so how about you just co-direct with me? And I said, okay, sure. I wasn't quite expecting that.
Here, he called your bluff.
he sure did. So, you know, so I'm glad I got the chance to do that, and mostly because I got to sit in on all the casting, and I got to sit in on all the production meetings and the design interviews and the design discussions, and learn so much through all of that process about what goes into how the sausage is made, the theatrical sausage.
And did it give you any insight into your work as an actor at all?
Being a director?
Being on the other side of the table, I guess.
Well, yeah, sure. I mean, I think the big thing I keep telling people is I will never, just from having sat through the audition process, I keep telling people I'll never take it personally when I don't get a job again. Yeah. It's remarkable. So many wonderful people come in, and you just can't cast them all.
Yeah.
You know, you there are things you're looking for, there are things you're trying to do, there are things you're trying to achieve as a director, and sometimes one person, for whatever reason, is just a little more right for whatever that thing is.
Mm-hmm.
But this notion that I think we have of, like, the best person for the role, I don't know that I believe that anymore. I think there's the best person for your production.
Yeah.
There's the best person for what you're trying to accomplish. And, of course, you cast the actor who gives, a great audition. You don't cast somebody who doesn't give a good audition just because they fit something in your mind. But there are many people who get great auditions. So that was a wonderful thing to learn, to just sit there and be able to watch how those decisions get made.
It was a wonderfully diverse cast as well, but all clearly an ensemble, but men, women, racial diversity. I mean, it was just the kind of thing that I guess the Brits have done for a very, very, very long time, but Americans are kind of maybe only figuring out now, outside of the New York Shakespeare Festival.
Yeah, it seems to be a really big discussion going on right now about casting and about... minority representation and on stage and in these kinds of works, and it was very important to us in the casting process. We talked a lot about it. We talked a lot about, again, quote unquote, it being an up to the minute production and an up to the minute world that we were, and the Rome that we were trying to create being a global empire.
Right.
We wanted it to feel global. We wanted it to feel international. So. I think to us the best way to do that was to get as many different faces in there as we could and as many different experiences in there to add to the conversation.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Comedy Podcast. Send us your extra textual issues via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can also engage with us and other fans on Facebook or Twitter. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. You can also follow me on Twitter @AustinTichner. Thanks, as always, to webmaster Matt Rippey, friend, Roman, and countryman Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and GarageBand. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Mara Luther. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Cynthia Ryder, Executive Director of the Oregon Shakespeare Festival. And finally, thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 514, 1540 seconds of the Reduced Shakespeare Company. Well, I could happily talk to you for another half hour, 45 minutes about this production because it was amazing, but I'll just say congratulations on your reduced Julius Caesar.
Oh, thank you. Yes, I know it is. It's a reduced Julius Caesar. It's true.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.
So much less. So much less.